Welcome home, everyone. Thank you for joining in on this episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Welcome Home is a podcast where I, your host Josh, sit down for a conversation with different people who I admire and discuss whatever's on their mind, and especially focus on life at home in times like this. Wherever you are and however you're listening, thank you for your support, and once again, welcome home. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining in on this week's episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Hope you all are having a good week. Hope you have enjoyed, hopefully, some nicer weather. And I know we have here in Franklin, Tennessee, just enjoying spring blooming right on time. I know, so last week, if you were listening, we had a guest, Alex Vasquez, one of our Love Squared associates, who lives here with us in Franklin. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, I encourage you to check it out. But none of the uncles were in town because they were in Paris. And just this past Monday, late Monday night, they came back from their trip into Europe. And I'm excited to have one of them, not my uncle actually, my dad, Joe Katina, here fresh off the plane from Paris, ready to teach us some French. Dad, bonjour.
Bonjour.
How are you, Dad?
What's another word?
Oh, man. You can just do English.
I'm great, Josh. I'm so glad to be with you. Merci beaucoup for the opportunity to be back on Welcome Home with the Katinas, hosted by Josh Katina. Awesome to be here today with you.
I'm glad to be here with you. We were just saying it's been a while since we've gotten to record a podcast like this here in my home, just the two of us. And I've been looking forward to this, and I'm glad that it sounds like you guys had a great trip. I'm sure we'll talk about that. Glad you made it home safely.
Thank you.
Why don't we start off there?
Yeah.
I'm sure the cousins would love to hear, what was Paris, France like for the Katinas?
So beautiful. We went to Paris, France with this church. Shout out to Charisma Christian Church, Pastor Pedro, Pastor Natalie, all of our friends at the Charisma Church, Walid, Wendy, Pedro, part of the family of God that are... I didn't know this, Josh. I didn't know how unchurched the country of France is. Hmm. Pastor Natalie told us about 1% identify as Christians. So wow. They are missionaries there.
Yeah.
And, being back after the last time we were there in Paris at this church was 10 years ago, maybe 11, almost 11, 2014. And so I remember during COVID, Pastor Natalie reached back out and said, "Hey, are you guys traveling? Would you be able to come?" And there was all kinds of limitations with the vaccine, and you might have had to be double vaxxed and all that. So it was too much work. Obviously, it didn't work out. And then since then, which is what, 2020? It feels like every year we would at least connect. Hey, what about this year? And then it wouldn't work out. Well, as always, God works out things in his perfect time. This was his perfect time for us to be there. It was awesome. And you know what? For me, especially, the double blessing was that Mom and I just celebrated our 32nd year wedding anniversary.
Congrats.
Thank you. On March 20th, which was, the Thursday while we were in Paris. So to be able to go and sing, to worship with the family at Charisma Christian Church, and then to experience Paris with Mom, because Mom hadn't gone with us the first two times we went. Man, Josh, it was one of the most memorable trips for me. And I would venture to say Mom would say the same thing. But it was beautiful.
Yeah. You guys were sending photos and videos and FaceTiming us. And I was, sometimes when you guys do that, I'm like, okay, I get it.
Be honest, was it like that again?
No, this no. time I wanted more. I was like, man, that looks amazing. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Europe, never been to Paris. It's a dream of mine to go. And so getting to see you guys see the things that I've always wanted to see, I was so happy for you guys and it made me excited. Let me just ask I know you guys did a lot of like the touristy things. Was there anything specifically that stood out that's like, yeah, if you get a chance, everyone needs to go do this?
You know, so as you know, this is how we've earned a living for the last 35 years of our lives is traveling. However, I don't know if it's my age. I'm appreciating places more than I've ever appreciated. Well, maybe I've taken it for granted, you know, traveling here and traveling there. Maybe it was just because we were in such a grind. And then when mom, you know, your wife is not there, it's not like you're, at least for me, I'm not trying to go see the city and learn about history, but this time was different. And I would say, I want to thank you and Alexis and Eli and Amelia, because you guys were saying, okay, you're going to Paris, and you started telling us history about France and Napoleon and Normandy and, you know, the River Seine, all these things that I, you know, me growing up in Samoa, I didn't learn about any of that, let alone American history. So I think mom and I went with our hearts and our eyes more open than at least normally for me. And when we got there, it was beyond. I mean, I just noticed the architecture, the roads, the cobblestone roads, the statues they have there, the Louvre. Bro, I'm embarrassed to say that I think the first time we went to Paris, maybe 12 years ago, well, first of all, the Louvre was closed and people drove us at night and said, that's the Louvre, that's the Louvre. And I remember specifically thinking, oh, well, great. But Dave May, you remember Dave May? He was playing guitar with us. He knew the significance of the Louvre. And I remember him looking at it with so much awe and like, oh, my gosh, that's the Louvre. I didn't appreciate it. And so this time, mom and I went. We did this tour. Mom signed us up for this tour. It says, the tour is See Paris in 9 hours.
Okay.
And Josh, it was all 9 hours. Wow. And my feet got kind of sore and, you know, we walked well over 12 miles that day. But it was worth it. Mm. It was so beautiful. The food was great. Everything about the trip, it was beautiful.
Mm. I'm so happy to hear that it was a good experience for you guys. I remember, you know, I spent a year going to community college here in Williamson County. And I remember I took an art class at a history of art class at Columbia State Community College. And I just remember, you know, we didn't necessarily grow up. I didn't grow up in a home where we like necessarily celebrated the arts outside of the music.
Dude, I apologize unless about it was that.
I don't think a lot of people did. But I remember learning a little bit. I'm definitely not an expert, but just a little bit about like the classics and the history of art and how our professor talked about how often, especially in Europe, art was an expression of worship for a lot of people. And there are a lot of the artists, the names, the single names that you hear about that you would recognize if you heard them, their hope was to express their awe of God through their art. And I do think, I've never been to the Louvre, but I can imagine seeing all of the art there, centuries worth collected all in one place. And seeing that the beauty and the dedication and the discipline, there's something I feel at least for me, that it triggers in humans because our creator is an artist.
Yes.
Our creator is a creator, mm-hmm. and he's a creator who makes creators. And we're, it's cool to see the pinnacle of what man can do.
Yeah.
Knowing that that comes from God, that's a gift from God. And I can imagine, in some way, I think the Louvre might be like a spiritual experience almost, is just seeing that.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you say, hey, I didn't grow up in a house, a home where we appreciated or celebrated that kind of art, I'm also thankful that it's never too late. You know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to start going to art galleries and all that. Maybe. But I think because, and I want to credit Mom, Lori. Thank you, honey, that she made it like, okay, honey, we're not going to just stay in the hotel and go eat and work out. Those are all good things, but we're going to learn what we can in the 7 days that we were there. So Mom, man, she booked these tours, and early in the morning, we woke up, did what, you know, devotion, eat breakfast, and then hit the road. And when I say hit the road, I mean like on foot.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's how they do it.
Dude, River Sen was like walking next to Steel Creek in our neighborhood. Yeah. Like we just did that throughout the every day. And, you know, there's no way you could see all of Paris in 7 days, but we soaked it in. And I could feel, yeah, I could feel God's expressions in whether it was the paintings or the sculptures, you know, the man, it was so opulent, so magnificent, so carefully designed and expressed that I'm grateful that I'm not, that my mind and my heart was able to open up to that. So I think what I want to say is, if you're listening, sometimes we put ourselves in the box, and I, from my own experience of, well, that's not who I am. I don't do that. I mean, name it. Like, well, I don't exercise. Well, maybe try. Maybe you would find some experience that there's a reason why other people do it. And you can push yourself. I just heard you and I were in the same meeting today where a guy said, you know, we all like to live in our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But when you get out of your comfort zone, what did he say? That's where the
magic happens.
That's where the magic happens. And so Paris, for the last 7 days for me, and Mom would say the same thing, and maybe for the other uncles and their wives who went, it was getting out of our comfort zone and experiencing this beauty that, and I'll be honest, when I see it on pictures or if I've seen it on TV and in movies, I didn't ever give myself space to appreciate. Mm-hmm. But man, God's world is so vast. Cultures are so amazing that you can learn, even in a, and maybe especially in a unchurched, not quote unquote Christian nation like France. Here's what I'll say. God is in France. Mm-hmm. God is everywhere. His presence is so powerful. And whether you have a place like Samoa, who, you know, 90% of them would claim that they believe in Jesus, or a place like Paris, France, where less than 1% believe in Jesus, man, God still owns it.
Yeah.
And if you want, and you get out of your comfort zone, you'll experience that magic.
It's awesome. I also want to ask you about, well, again, say congratulations to you for celebrating 32 years,
yeah,
of marriage. You got, you and Mom, I feel like it's become more common now for you guys to do like a trip for your wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys make a bigger deal of it now, at least probably because you don't have kids in the house anymore. Do you think that's what it is? Or
man, I would say, Josh, maybe some of it that, you know, that no, my Mom and I were talking about that, you know, no kids, we don't have to hurry up and get back. A little bit, some, you have, when you don't have kids, you discover you have more resources.
Yes.
And I don't say that as a regret, because again, when you and Eli were at home, we enjoyed taking care of you, and we enjoyed the resources went to the right place. And now, as God opened this door, and yeah, I would say yes. I think we do take our anniversary. What's the word that I'm looking for? We celebrate it more, I guess, purpose intentionally. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good time to get away if you can, and go do something that you wouldn't normally do. Save up all year if you need to, and just enjoy God's vast world with the person you love the most.
I definitely, being married 32 years is something worth celebrating, and something that I know doesn't just happen. It's no one, just a 32 year marriage doesn't just fall into people's laps. Mm-hmm. And you and Mom have, I know you guys have worked hard at through many seasons of marriage, and but I'm curious that now I know, as you move into your next year of marriage, did you take any time to reflect and think about, how old were you when you got married?
I was 23. 23.
Did you take any time to reflect and think about 23-year-old Joe? If you didn't, like, is there any words of wisdom you think you could share with him that he needed when he was 23 that you maybe have picked up along the way after 32 years of marriage?
Yes. I talk to younger Joe a lot more in the last 2.5 years than I ever have. You know some of my story, Josh, and just going through anxiety, trauma, addiction, you know, being in a life of surrender, recovery, one day at a time, doing the best that I can. And I'm thankfully that, you know what, I don't have to be perfect, because that's why I need God. So I talk to my younger Joe. I would say before 2.5 years ago, I think that would be weird. Like, what? What are you talking about? But thankfully, through the help of God's word and meditation and therapy, that I look back at, you know, sometimes 12-year-old Joe, 18-year-old Joe, 23-year-old Joe, 50-year-old Joe, even. And if I could speak to him, like, well, you're giving me the opportunity, I would say to 23-year-old Joe, you don't have to figure it all out. You can figure it all out. You only know a little. But the little that you know is enough for today. I would say 23-year-old Joe, work, show up like you did, and relax. I think 23-year-old Joe, I felt like it was all up to me. Like, if I don't do it, if I don't make it happen, it's not going to happen. If I want to be safe, I got to keep myself safe. I got to provide for my family. I got to build this career. I got to work hard with my brothers. We're going to change the world. I mean, not all of that is bad ambition, but I would say to 23-year-old Joe, no, man, you don't have to change the world. You just have to be you and let God change you. And anything else that needs to be changed or influenced by you, it will happen. You just follow God one day at a time.
It's good. Let me ask you, this might be a different question or something you've never done before, but if you could talk to Mom, was what, 27, 28? Mm. Young Lori Beth. Is there anything you would say to her? Maybe at that point of her life, now knowing what you know?
The first thing I would say is I'm sorry. You mean like now, like I would say 27-year-old Lori?
Yeah, or when you today, if you had a conversation with her.
Yes, for sure, I'm sorry. I know that at 23, 24, when me and mom got married, I would like to believe, and I do believe, that I loved her with as much capacity that I knew that I could. But when I think about what mom went through because of defects of mine that I didn't even know, or I was too arrogant to work on or acknowledge, she had to travail a lot. And she did. And it's not like, I'm sure mom would say, well, she wasn't perfect either. But I just think that, I think I just put mom through a lot of things that if I could have been, if I could have trusted God more, I wouldn't have. I think I put pressure on mom and expectations on mom because somebody had to bear it. And I would say I'm sorry. Yeah. And then the second thing I would say is thank you. Thank you for her. Thank you for staying the course. Thank you for the grace. Thank you for believing in me. Mom, that's one thing I know about mom. And we wouldn't have lasted 32 years if she didn't believe in me and keep believing in me. I think it's easy for people to say, well, I believe in you. I believe in you. But when you know the whole story, or you've lived throughout the whole story, your proof that you believe in somebody, in my opinion, is showing up every day. Mm-hmm. And mom did that.
Yeah,
she's done that. Mm-hmm. And she does that.
It's great. I just finished reading this book. I read it because it's Alexis's favorite book, or one of her favorite books. I never read it before. It's called Gone Girl. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but I heard you guys talking about it on your... Did you talk about it on your podcast?
I think so, yeah. I read it, and it's a... it's like a... I guess you call it like a murder mystery kind of book, but at its core, what the story really is about is it's about a failing marriage. And I think I enjoyed the book because the author somehow was able to capture how good things can look on the outside but be horrible behind closed doors. And even the couple that it's about, it's like they had convinced themselves that everything was good, but it really wasn't. And they could never figure out how to be honest with each other. Oh. And part of me is like, why is this my wife's favorite book? But I do feel like it's a fiction. It's not a true story, and it's really, I don't think it's intended to be like a marriage story, but one thing I took from it was just that, in marriage, I think both parties involved, whether they know it or not, their core desire is just to be known by the other. And, if you don't allow yourself to be known and be honest and work to know the real who's your wife really is, or who your husband really is, you're on a road to disaster.
Yeah.
And I think a testament for to you and Mom is that I think you two really know each other. I think you guys really know each other, and you just choose each other, and you love each other, and I think that's beautiful and inspiring. And so I'm glad that you guys got the chance to celebrate 32 yeah. years of getting to know each other in the city of love. And so
thanks, Josh.
Congrats again, Dad.
Dude, that means so much. I mean, I don't know of a greater gift for a father to hear his son say what you just said, Josh, and I appreciate that, because you know, I mean, you and Eli and even Alexis and Amelia know more about me and even Mom than most people, than anyone else. And for you to say that it's a blessing. And I want to say something. You said the book is about a failing marriage, right? When you said that, it, for anyone who's been married for any amount of time, and I'm not going to, it doesn't matter if it's 32 years or 50 years or 2 years. I don't know if I've ever preached this in a message. If I haven't used these exact words, I have insinuated to this fact that failure is part of the process. There's no marriage, in my opinion, that lasts for any amount of time that is fulfilling, that hasn't experienced not one season, but maybe many seasons of failure. We can't always succeed. We can't always be doing great. If you are, I think you're in denial. And that was part of my, when I talk about before 2.5 years ago, I just thought that life was supposed to, well, no, I've got to, I should be succeeding in every area. And in the area that I'm not succeeding, what happened when I didn't know it until it caught up to me was I was numbing out, working out, you know, numbing out on work, numbing out on doing good things, numbing out on doing bad things. And what I didn't realize is, no, dude, that's okay. You're failing. Accept that. Work on that. If you don't ever accept or take or own that, okay, this is an area in my life where I'm failing. I need help. Then you can get help. And you don't have to stay in failure, or you don't have to quit. And I'm not, again, I don't know, I'm not a therapist or a marriage counselor. I am not that. But I am a part of a marriage that has experienced amazing fulfillment in some seasons and unexplainable failure in other seasons. And we're still here.
Yeah. That's great, Dad. It's always fun talking to you about marriage, and I feel like my marriage with Alexis is blessed because of you and Mom's marriage and
thank you.
Alexis's parents, Jim and Karen, and we're lucky to have two not perfect, but good models of what people look like who love each other are. And I guess I'll move on to another subject. It's a kind of about Paris, but kind of not. I've been lucky enough to travel overseas a few times in my life. And one thing that I've noticed is that leaving the country can give you a new perspective on your own home. And I always feel like I've learned something about my home by leaving it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, while it's still fresh in your mind, is there anything that your perspective about America, that Paris changed about your perspective about America, good or bad?
Yes. Man, we're young. We are new, you know. And I love America, you know, the freedoms that we have here. And that's not to say that, you know, other people don't. I don't know all the freedoms that other people don't have. But we're such a young country. In fact, I remember, you know, when I watch movies or TV shows, and when I see the landscape of New York or LA or any major city, I used to think before this last trip to Paris, man, look at that building. Oh, wow. That how long has that been around? Well, after coming back from Paris, I know this. It ain't been around as long as Paris, France has been around. Yeah. So we're such a new country. Mm-hmm. And again, I love that I didn't get to experience like the culture of like what everyday people in France face. I'm sure as beautiful as it is to me, they have their own struggles, their own, you know, political stresses there that we have here. But I don't know if God called me and mom to live somewhere else, that would be it would be really hard to move away from you guys, to move away from Josiah. I know I'd miss America. So I'm grateful for what we have here.
Yeah.
I'm grateful that if you want to own a business and you work hard, you can own a business. In other countries, the taxes are so high that, you know, after earning just the basic needs of life, it's almost impossible to own a business. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm thankful. I'm thankful for America, and I always am when I come back home.
Yeah. Joe Rogan had a guy on his podcast. This was maybe years ago, and he said something that it kind of stuck with me about how nations are a lot like people. Hmm. The older you get, the less you change. And you know, when you go to the remnants of old empires like France or Italy or the UK, those are old places that have been around for centuries and centuries. And in a way, there is a stability that comes with that because they have an established culture and an established way of life. And there is something nice about that stability. When you're in France, if you're French, you know what it means to be French. Mm-hmm. And you know what your role is in society there. And but on the other hand, if for whatever reason you don't like what it means to be French or mm-hmm. what your role is in society there, it's a lot harder to make change out there.
Yeah.
Just because things are so set in their ways. Here in America, I think, like you said, it's hard for us to realize it, but we are so young. In many ways, if France was a 60-year-old man, we're a 16-year-old mm-hmm. boy mm-hmm. in the U.S. And I think that it makes sense that if you ask anyone in France, what's it mean to be French? I bet you get a lot of the same answers. Mm-hmm. If you ask people in America, what's it mean to be an American? I think you get a lot of different answers.
I agree.
And I think it's because part of that is because we're in our teenage identity crisis mm-hmm. years where, you know, the life of a teenager is chaos.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of chaos in America right now. And I say all of that to say maybe it's natural. Maybe we just happen to live here in this country in the time where we're just going through puberty. Mm. We're going through time with a lot of change and a lot of, we don't really know who we are at some times, and we're trying to figure things out and figure out our place in the world. And I don't know. I imagine that going to a place like France can give you gratitude for mm-hmm. the opportunities that we have here, mm-hmm. and also perspective that, you know, because France one time was the U.S. when they went through the French Revolution, and mm-hmm. they had a lot of questions about, well, what's France going to be, and mm-hmm. who are we going to be, and I'm not an expert on French history, but I do know there was many times where France almost stopped being France, mm-hmm. and but they're still here somehow, yeah. and I have to believe that it makes me hopeful for the future of America, knowing that we're just getting started, yeah. and in a way, as Americans today, we're in a position to make lasting impact on the future. I believe in America, and you know, I think I was actually thinking about this recently. I've listened to this podcast called what's it called? Fear and Loathing in the New Jerusalem by this historian named Daryl Cooper, and it's a 6-part series about the history of the Israel-Palestine conflict. Okay. And he spends time talking about identity, for like, where do people get identity from? And one of the things he challenged the listeners to do is think about, what are the things, the groups that you associate with that make you you? Because that's a big part of what makes us human. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, okay, what are my identities? Well, I think, if I'm being honest, the most important part of my identity is I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. I'll deny everything else before I denied that. Mm-hmm. After I'm a Christian, I'm a husband. Mm. This is just me. I deny everything but God for my wife, I mm-hmm. think. After I'm a husband, I'm a Katina. Mm-hmm. And then after a Katina, I think I'm an American. Mm. Those are the things. I even thought, I don't know if this will make you feel a way, but I was like, am I Samoan or am I American? Mm-hmm. What's more important to me? And I think, if I'm honest, I'm an American before I'm a Samoan. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of losing track now. I've been talking for a while. But what I wanted to say was that America is important to me, mm-hmm. even though I have my gripes with it.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that I live during a time of America's history that I can make an impact, and I can yeah. help shape things. And I'm sure you probably, it's cool to hear that your perspective that you gained from your trip to Paris is that, man, we're really young.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I appreciate what you just shared about identity. I was running yesterday, and sometimes I listen to music, sometimes, very few times, but more so with this digital fast that our church is going through, I go silent. But if I'm going long, I run, well, long for me, I really need some motivation. So I sometimes listen to motivational speakers. And one dude on there, he kept talking about, he said, the bottom line, and, you know, he's trying to inspire people. He said, it all comes down. And he wasn't necessarily a Christian speaker. And I was like, what is he about to say? What does it all come down to? Like, is it perseverance? Is it your attitude? Is it your perspective? What is it? And he's a well-known speaker, millions of followers. And he said, it all comes down to identity. And so when you're talking about that, I think I agree with him, because if it's all about who you are. And I'm not saying that sometimes I waffle on my identity. You know, some days I feel, no, I'm this, I'm an overcomer. And then other days it's, I don't always feel that positive about who I am. So the question is, if you're listening, what is your identity? Who are you? And I think it's a question to continually ask yourself. 23-year-old Joe, 55-year-old Joe, who I am, who am I? And I would hope that what has got me here, not that I have not failed, but why I'm still living, I'm still a dad, I'm still a husband, I'm still a brother, I still have purpose in my life, is the number one thing about my identity is I'm a follower of Christ. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a follower of Christ, I would encourage you to just ask yourself, who are you? Because whoever that is, determines not just your identity, but how you live your life. But in my opinion, ultimately your destiny.
Hmm. Would you do that practice with me really quick? Talking about your identity?
Yes.
What would you say? So the way the guy that explained it was, what group, your number one identity means you would drop everything else in your life, even if it's hard.
Sure.
At the end of the day, you would drop everything for that, your number one.
Yeah.
And then it goes just down the list.
So you keep going down. Mm-hmm. Like how many down?
Just as many as you want. And then I have something funny at the end to tell you. But.
First of all, a Christ follower.
Okay.
Second would be a husband. Mm-hmm. Third would be a dad. I'm going to put granddad in there too.
Okay.
Fourth would be a Katina, my mm-hmm. family. Fifth would be Samoan. Mm-hmm. And after that, it would be American.
Okay.
And then last would be, well, last right now, male.
Hmm. Okay.
Why are you laughing? Well,
I was doing that practice. I was thinking, okay, who am I? So our lists were pretty similar. And then I tried to see how far could I go down before I had to put Laker fan. Because Laker fan was way high. Up there. It was pretty high. Dude. Embarrassingly high. I was thinking, okay, what's more important to me, being from Tennessee or being a Laker fan? It's being a Laker fan. Okay, what's next? And so, I don't
know. That's awesome.
But yeah, it was a fun practice.
How far did you get down?
Like numbers?
Where did Tennessee come?
It was probably, I don't think it was top 10.
Okay.
I think it was higher.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. But that's funny.
Yeah, it was interesting to think about. And I also, this is different, but I often think about that verse in the Bible, in the gospel, where Jesus says, I can't quote it word for word, but it's like, anyone who wants to follow me, deny your mother and your father, deny your family. Mm-hmm. That has always been a challenging verse to me. Mm-hmm. Because if you really think about what Jesus is asking of, he's mm-hmm. asking a lot out mm-hmm. of people. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to deny your family mm-hmm. for Christ? And I think I've been on this journey of like, kind of indirectly answering that question for myself. Like, how important is Christ to me? Mm-hmm. How important is, do I really fear God? Do mm-hmm. I really respect God? Do I really think I need God? And I don't know. I've been going through that journey because I think that's a big part of establishing your identity in Christ. Is your identity is what will you deny for this? Mm-hmm. And if, I don't know, I think I'm in a place where I can honestly say I would deny everything mm-hmm. before I denied Christ. And but Peter said the same thing. So
sure.
You never
be careful. Be careful.
Well, Dad, this has been fun. Anything else you want to say before we go?
Dude, I'm proud of you.
Oh, thanks.
Proud of you. Not just for just this podcast that you do every week. But just in Paris, there was a moment where, and I think that's why it's good to get away. And again, I'm not saying you have to get away, but when I was in a different country and I was with mom, the love of my life, but I think it gave me time to reflect. And there was one time where I just really missed you and Eli deeply. And so I texted you, each of you separately. Sometimes I text you guys on the thread, but I just felt like it was important to text you separately of how much I love you and how proud I am to be your dad. If you want me to say anything, that's what I feel right now. I'm just so proud of you. I'm proud of the husband you are. And, you know, I'm proud. I'm thankful that we get to work together to make a difference, living out our destiny and this identity that God, that we have in Christ. We don't have to do any more or any less. We just be who we are. And by the grace of God, this God that we trust, he uses us to help others.
Mm-hmm. I am going to correct myself. I don't think, but I'm thinking about what I said, I would deny everything before Christ. I don't think I would. I think I have that desire, though.
Mm.
I think because I know there's plenty of times every day where I choose something over Christ.
For sure.
And but my desire is to get to a place where I can honestly say, yeah, I deny everything else before I deny you. So just had to correct myself because I know God's one of our audience members.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And man, I don't know. I don't have some kind of deep explanation for that scripture, but here's what I believe. If God is a perfect God, and I believe he is, with how much I love you and Eli, and how much you're going to love your child when he comes or she comes, you ain't asking your kids to do anything to prove their love. That's just what I think. And if that's me, I think I, today, at least right now, I trust that God, whatever he asks me to give up or deny, he's going to give me the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the God I choose to believe in. And maybe, and that's, well, no, you're putting God in a box. I don't know. I just know that this God, that this intimate God that I keep learning about and I'm learning more and more about, is beyond my understanding. But like I said earlier, what I would tell 23-year-old Joe, I tell 55-year-old Joe most days, hey, Joe, you only know a little, but the little you know is enough for today.
It's good. I think that's a good place to end. Thank you for being here.
I love you.
Love you. To those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with more episodes soon. Have a great day.